You're listening to the Marketplace Flash Briefing. I'm Kai Ryssdal. It's Friday, and we're taking a look back at the week. So this was Infrastructure Week for, I don't know, a couple of 3 hours yesterday, between the time President Biden said there was a deal and the time that political reality reasserted itself in Washington, D.C., this nation's capital. We, though, are concerned with the economic reality of it all, so that is where we will start this week in review. Catherine Rampell is at The Washington Post. Brian Chung is at Yahoo Finance. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Kai.
Hey, Kai.
So, Catherine, let me start with you, and I do not repeat not want to get into the politics of this infrastructure deal and all that is going on in Washington, because it is Byzantine and unresolved on its very best of days. But I do want to point out that on the one sheet that was circulating yesterday about the pay-fors on this thing, where they were going to get the money to do this, the bottom bullet point was also economic growth through infrastructure investment. And unlike, say, tax cuts, which have never in the history of tax cuts paid for themselves, infrastructure investment is actually an economic boon.
Well, tax cuts can also be an economic boon as well, just not as much of a boon as many of their promoters say they will be. The real question is, how much additional growth do any of these programs actually add? And is it enough to overcome or to fully offset some significant portion of the spending that's being invested, right? Yep. And we don't really know that in the case of infrastructure yet, but you know, you can kind of make some assumptions about how much additional growth, you know, improving the highway system would be, or fixing the bridge down the road, or what have you. There were some other budget gimmicks in there that bothered me a little bit more than the dynamic scoring issue that you just identified. Like, they counted a bunch of things like, you know, basically we're going to save waste, fraud, and abuse on unemployment insurance benefits, which I find, you know, more gimmicky, and claiming savings from, or excuse me, not savings, claiming revenue that we've already received from the spectrum auction. So there were a bunch of things that suggested that if CBO ever actually scores this thing, it is not going to add up to nearly as much as this bipartisan group of senators claim it will add up to.
Brian, do you suppose if this thing falls apart, and I know I said I didn't want to get into the politics, but we're going to go in there just a little tiny bit. Do you suppose if this falls apart, which as of today, you know, the two sides are moving farther apart, not closer together, does this do anything to the recovery that seems to be booming right along?
Well, one challenge is that even if it does go through as passed, it's going to take time for a lot of these measures to bleed through the economy when it comes to either getting employment or having the productivity effects that the Democrats and those crafting this bill would like it to have. And that's because of the nature of infrastructure, right? It doesn't take 6 to 12 months to build a new bridge or to fix an airport, to get these electric vehicles out on the street. It takes many, many years. And in fact, infrastructure is by nature a longer term play. So when we talk about the economic immediate impact of this, I think a lot of officials, economists, and public policymakers as well are saying, well, we have to remember that the idea of this is not to immediately provide some sort of windfall to the economy, this pandemic recovery economy in the next 1 or 2 years. It's really a much longer play than that.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, so Catherine, somebody on Twitter today gave me a hard time, shocking news, I know, about breaking my word on this program last week when I said, okay, we're going to do a brief moratorium on inflation. But we can't actually do that because it's a real issue. And I want to direct your attention to two things. Number one, Jay Powell, the chair of the Fed today, this week, giving testimony to Congress, in which it was pretty clear that the chair is, as we knew, not worried about inflation, but Congress, whether to score political points or genuinely, seems to be worried about inflation. And also Rafael Bostic, the president of the Atlanta Fed, saying on another public radio program whose initials are Morning Edition this week, that inflation is going to be higher than we expected for longer than we expected. Do you have any new ideas on perhaps whether or not we should stop thinking about inflation? Because I really want to, and it seems that we can't.
Well, we can't because we're still getting data, obviously, and there are a lot of unknowns out there about whether the price spikes that we've seen recently will be transitory as Jay Powell, mm-hmm. among others, has suggested that they will be. And the other question is, you know, how much of this is a self-fulfilling prophecy? That even if lumber prices start to fall back to earth, as they have done, or used car prices, same deal, you know, they shot up and they seem to be moderating now. Yeah. Does the public get so convinced that these prices will be pervasive and sustained that they preemptively start raising price? You know, if you're a small business owner, you start raising your prices, or people start asking for wage increases to account for those prices. So it's this funny situation where it's like, the more we talk about it, maybe that ends up willing it into being. But on the other hand, you can't dismiss people's fears about it, because especially if you are at the Fed, because you need to maintain your credibility. And Chairman Powell wants to show that he has all of this stuff under control. And he is taking into account these concerns, and the Fed has the tools to deal with them. And I think that's the line that he's walking now.
Brian Chung, first time on the program, so let me put you on the spot. What's your gut telling you about whether it's transitory, as the Fed chair seems to be hoping and believing? Or is it going to stick around for a while? And I would note today that we got the Fed's favorite measure of inflation, personal consumption expenditures, PCE, running about 4%, 3.9% year on year. What do you think?
And we did get more data. I think what my gut is telling me is that we need to see more months of data. And as you mentioned, the data coming in this morning from the Bureau of Economic Analysis showing that personal consumption expenditures, the index grew by 3.9% on a year-over-year basis. That actually was right as Wall Street expected it, which is maybe why we didn't see too much craziness in the market today, although we did see bond yields go up. But I think broadly speaking, what's interesting is that these are eye-popping figures. Even when you strip out those more volatile components like the Fed likes to do, energy and food prices from that index, you still get a year-over-year increase of 3.4%, which was the highest since 1992. And I think the question is going to be, well, going forward, should we expect to see numbers that are even above those figures? And I just actually got off a conversation with Boston Fed President Eric Rosengren earlier this afternoon. He was saying, look, when you look at airline fares and hotel rates, those are still coming back fast, but they're still below pre-pandemic levels, which shows that we should expect to see inflation move even higher to more eye-popping numbers maybe in the coming months.
Eye-popping numbers is not a phrase you want to hear, Brian, when you're talking about inflation.
Not at all. And I think that this is really the test for the Federal Reserve. And they've said for a while, look, we're okay with allowing inflation to rise above our 2% target moderately. But for right now, Fed officials have said, yes, we're getting well above 2%, but this is all transitory. It's from supply chain bottlenecks. It's from the measuring effects when you're comparing current months to the depths of the pandemic last spring. But ultimately, will that story hold up in June, July, August, September? That's going to be the big test for their reaction function.
All right. Well, so much for my inflation moratorium. Brian Chung at Yahoo Finance, Catherine Rempel at The Washington Post. Thanks, you two. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Scott.
Have a nice week.
Thanks.
That's all for today's Flash Briefing. For more news, visit marketplace.org.